1968, I became a design executive. The term design took hold at the, we called the Design Center around that time. And it had to do primarily, I think, to get a status with the Industrial Design Society of America, IDSA. And we heard it at various times that they took a not too kindly view towards automotive designers, per se, because we all came from various areas and so forth, and they didn't give us full credit. I think Gene was more or less responsible for getting that across to them and the terminology corrected, that we are designers, not just stylists, which means a hairstylist or a costume stylist, whatever. It put more dignity to the doggone occupation.
Was this Mr. Bourdonnais, his innovation, or was
I
it
think
taking
so.
Place
I think so.
Other?
No, I think it was his, and I don't question that.
Mm-hmm. Fine, good. So this gave you status and prestige that the word stylist did not
right,
put it.
Right. And getting back to the Bunky situation, who tried his best to bring in all the GM ways and means, just didn't fit into our line of thinking at all. And we had the two camps in the Design Center, which I think was played havoc with all of us. And finally we got word that...
in other words, it was Bunky and Shinoda and Wheeler against everybody else?
Yeah, it was used that way.
Mm-hmm, right. So it became a political situation.
Probably the greatest political thing of that time.
Adversarial.
Yeah. And consequently, when Knutson was finally taken care of with Mr. Ford, we all kind of had a meeting. I remember that day because the word was out. Gene called all of us into the conference room and related to us that Bunky was fired and that Lee would be taken over, and we all kind of were relieved over the whole thing.
Was there a small cheer or a bit of hand clapping?
You don't do that kind
you
of thing.
Okay.
No, but we're all smiling, said good. great.
Yeah.
We don't have those morning shows, and we don't have to fight the two-way system.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure Bourdonnais was happy at that time to be away from this constant mixmash.
Looking back on that odd episode.
And also, right after that, I don't mean it.
Please.
When those things happened, I think Mr. Shinoda was on his way out the door the same day. So,
looking back on that odd episode, that odd, disturbing, chaotic episode, did Shinoda and Knutson come up with anything solid in terms of concepts that you felt were useful and lasting design concepts?
Well, he enlarged and kind of minimized the Thunderbird and so on. I think...
you mean enlarged the dimensions, but
yeah,
trivialized it?
Yeah,
that's
true. And I can't think of anything that he did that saved the company anything whatsoever.
Did Shinoda have any talent? Design talent?
Believe it or not, he was a protege or a something of Knutson's, as I understand it. Shinoda was very interested in the race car business.
Oh.
And Bunky used to go to the races. And he, as I understand it, used to see Shinoda at these races.
Mm-hmm.
And Shinoda at the time was just a designer on the board. But they did have that rapport of the past days meeting at the racetrack.
Mm, I see.
And I think Bunky tried his best to get all his General Motors pals over, as you know.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, there was a statement that he tried to get Chuck Jordan to replace Gene at the time.
This is the first I've heard that. Can you enlarge on that?
Well, this is all,
yes,
what we know is hearsay.
And rumor.
And rumor. Mm-hmm. But I think it happened because there was this, he wanted his own design,
mm-hmm,
chief.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that Gene was a little bit nervous at that time too.
Sure.
They did not get Chuck Jordan over there, but I think at that time that they said, well, we have a good guy by the name of Don Kopka. And at that time, Don came over to Ford.
From?
I think Chrysler.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, not Chrysler, but or Chuck Jordan knew Don Kopka. They were friends.
I see. Mm-hmm.
Now, I've forgotten exactly where Don came from.
I think it was Chrysler.
Yeah. But anyway, they were friends.
Mm-hmm.
And Chuck says, well, I'm not coming. Because they gave him the, I think, the assistant vice president or something at that time.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, Don did come over and at that time.
Gave a certain weight to,
yeah,
the department.
Right. And but Don played it down the middle. He didn't go one way or the other and so forth. But I get that's what I hear.
Mm-hmm.
Those 60s were kind of interesting years. I think that's the time when we I went down the basement where we had the and I don't know whether anybody told you about this airplane.
Mm-hmm. No, go ahead.
That is the first time that we had a design group did a mock-up of a fuselage and of an airplane.
Mm-hmm.
The whole interior of the thing, and I've forgotten what
the cabin,
exact,
the fuselage,
exact number. Yeah,
mm-hmm,
it was going to be Mr. Ford's personal plane.
Uh-huh.
But how do you do the interior design of a plane? Well, they did this downstairs, and they had this big fuselage made in wood and cardboard and so on, and the whole interior made.
A walk-in, stand-up interior.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And it had a bedroom facility and a bar and a lounge and room for some more passengers. So, I've forgotten who was working on the project. He was a manager or something. And I said, what kind of bed are you putting in the thing? Well, he says, we're going to put a queen mattress. Mr. Portlitz owns a queen mattress. And I said,
not a king?
No, and I wondered, how are you going to get the right mattress? You know, so as a story says, that's a good question. I don't know how are we going to find out does he sleep on a Simmons or a Serta or what?
Yeah.
So somebody, I think, called the house and one of the maids found out that what kind of mattress they would pull up the sheet.
That's marvelous.
And so anyway.
Genius.
We got the mattress and so forth, and that thing was actually done. And as I understand it, it was a company plane, and you could sleep on it, going overseas and so on. But, and I think it was stated in Lee's book. I'm not sure. I read the book, and I think he mentioned something. He didn't like the thing. But anyway, it ended up being sold to the Shah.
Of Iran.
Yeah. Yeah.
This was a 747, wasn't it?
I think so.
Mm-hmm.
747? No. 747 that came later. This was, I think in this, I'd forgotten in the second, it wasn't a 747.
But your input was the interior that you worked on.
No, I didn't do a thing on it. I just went down and said, what mattress are you going to use? So,
that's marvelous.
There were all kind of little things.
Yeah, it's fascinating.
About the thing, color schemes and so on.
So you were responsible for securing the proper mattress for Henry Ford's airplane bed, right?
I asked the question, right?
That's perfect.
So anyway, that...
he probably thanked you unconsciously for several years.
I don't know whether he ever used it.
Oh, really?
I don't know. I really don't.
I'm sure. I think he did.
And, gosh, I don't what happened to that, except that that was a, it was under covers and it at the time, because you know, a lot of these things are different, done on different budgets.
In several different levels.
Yeah.
Right. That's it.
So anyway, but let's see, from that, you might should turn it off for a minute. I'm going to one of the things that were done during that time was that we would spearhead a car program with the students of Art Center.
Now, where was that?
In California.
Pasadena?
Los Angeles.
Los Angeles in those days.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. They moved to Pasadena since.
Right.
I was to write up a program with the help of my manager, Fritz Mayhew, and we would present a program to Art Center to follow for their semester. And so we wrote down many, many things that the students could do. There, at the time, there was about 10 students, probably the same thing right now, because they get 10 transportation students out there. However, we wrote up a program and pioneered that, because we had charge that year and General Motors the following year, and then Chrysler. We alternated the car companies with the project that the art students students would do. Keith Teeter was out there and still is.
Who's that?
Keith Teeter.
How do you spell that?
T-E-T-E-R.
Uh-huh.
Keith. He used to work at Ford, and he went there and quit Ford to go out there because of health reasons. Mm-hmm. And kind of is the professor in charge of that.
Is he?
Yeah.
There was another, a GM man who was still there. Strother McMinn, was he there then?
No, I don't think so.
Okay, good.
I don't recall that at all.
Mm-hmm.
Chuck Jorgensen or something was there in 55.
Uh-huh.
And he was from General Motors. And he kind of started that whole program.
Mm.
And I think Keith took over from Chuck Jorgensen.
Mm-hmm.
That when he retired there. Okay, getting to the program, it was to be a world car. It would cost $1,000 and have different tops to it and different uses. And I remember going out there, and it's a little bit of fact, and that was in 69, that we went out there. There were 8 American students and 2 Japanese students. We gave the students the projects and went back another time to see what they did. And when we went back, each student had to give a presentation of what they were doing and what they had designed for the world car. And always remember that the American students would give a fairly decent presentation of what they're doing. But I was always amazed at the Japanese, who had figured out over and above what we gave them to do, the correct engine for the car, the drive line, and how they would do it from the ground up. Almost to the tire size and everything. I was amazed at the Japanese, how thorough they were at that time. That was 69. And I'm sure that, you know, they learned a lot from California and took it back to Japan. And I'm sure that Japan only sent the cream of the crop. But even then, they were more thorough than our American guys.
The concept of a world car is fascinating at this point. Even though you had an active international division, you had not thought at this point about a car that would be adaptable to all parts of the empire, the Ford Empire, had you?
No, it wasn't a world car in concept. Was that it had many functions.
Oh, I see.
It wasn't a world car like the Escort or something.
It wasn't the interchangeability.
No.
It was the adaptability.
Adaptability.
Okay, good, yeah.
And some of them had the, you know, where you take off the rear of the car and make a truck out of it, or a car or passenger thing with it. You'd adapt situations to it.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So that was kind of a sideline. Now,
mm-hmm.
you want to stop it now?
Oh.
Okay, during the 70s, when we had our first initial gas crunch, And we were standing in the line for our gas and so on. We also had a crunch at the Ford Motor Company, and I, at that time, was in charge of color and trim for the Ford Motor Company. This is fabrics, paints, and also I had an advanced interior studio at the same time. But let's dwell on the what happens in a crunch of that. The cars were not selling. We didn't have money to retool things. And what happens in that is that I got into a situation where the plants were saying that we have a surplus of fabrics. The car lines were shut down. We had trouble with paint at that time because all the metallic paints, when they are in the vats, the sedimentation of silver would settle to the bottom, and then they
left it there for a longer time.
Yeah, and then they'd restart this thing. The line would start up again, and in those days, I don't think they had stirrers at what they went to, but sometimes they had a problem with layer paints and so forth. They wouldn't match due to the silver going down to the bottom.
You didn't have any electric joggers or?
Well, they did. They went into that.
Okay.
Because of that problem.
Yes.
At the same time, the plants, you can't sell cars, so you have fabric and trim styles all left over. So I remember going through that program the first year of so much yardage of yard goods that had to be used from year to year and in the cars. And you'd be surprised at how many fabrics we had to pick. And once they're in, they're in position. But here we had a surplus, so we had many, many surplus meetings on that type of thing.
Now, let me get this straight. You had ordered this material in expectation of having a
Well, every year.
Full volume?
To get production. To pick a fabric is a 3-year process.
Okay. Fine.
It's even longer than doing a new car.
Mm-hmm.
You pick the fabric from a New York fabric house.
Mm-hmm.
It has to be restructured. If you like a fabric that you saw on a sofa or something like that, and you want it for a car, this whole fabric system has to be restructured to meet automotive standards. That means that the fabric has to be woven in such a way to be strong enough to adhere to a abrasive surface, such as we used to have sandpaper, and you have so many revolutions before the yarn went, and we hold the sandpaper up to the fabric, and they do these tests.
Mm-hmm.
It had to be pass certain engineering tests.
Mm-hmm.
So that is a time-consuming thing, just to get the fabric woven to that specification and still look like the original fabric. So by the time, and then we have a color process, then we have to have the fabric into the approved 5 or 7 colors of interiors. So that is a dye process and so forth. And it is a full 36 months to get that through. So that's about the longest. You know, you say, well, I like this fabric. Sometimes people come to you, the vendors, and they say, oh, these fabrics have been lab tested. So then you can get into that. But anyway, and it's at that time during the crunch that the designer marks came about, mainly to stir up business, being that you could not change the car itself because they couldn't afford a new model per se. So you get into innovations of color and trim, special paints, and so on. That's the only, you know, that's the way, one way to sell cars. And if you can't sell them through a new model, you change the color and you change the trim.
In terms of vendors,
yeah.
You had ordered this in advance. and you decided you couldn't use it, what would you do? Did the vendor, you said earlier the vendors would come to you saying, I've got all this material, are you gonna use it?
Then we go through the trim program with them and just say, well, okay, but tough, we can't pick anything new yet because we're still running on the old.
Well, you would have used the old stuff, huh?
Oh, yeah.
Since you purchased it.
That's right.
They wouldn't let you throw it away.
Oh, no. So anyway, to live through one of these programs is quite something.
In other words, what you had ordered had to be used. You couldn't change it.
That's right. So we used it here and there, wherever we could.
But you did have a problem with the silver settling to the bottom of the paint tank.
Yep, and I think that's at the time that they got into these automatic stirrers.
I see. That would agitate it.
Yeah, yeah.
Recombine it. Good.
Strange that the paint changes that. Wait, but it does. Big fats.
Yeah. Names,
right?
These were for two tones, or for shades.
Yep. Uh-huh. So anyway, we might as well stop that thing. That's. We're getting back to the color and trim area, which I dreaded. When I first heard about this job that was in the offing, I dreaded this. And my predecessor somehow had a falling out with Dave Ash. And didn't see eye to eye, and the first thing Dave says, I got you over here to head up the color and trim area. You and I see eye to eye.
That was Ash, a senior.
He was director of interior.
Director of interior. Right.
Yes. And I said, Dave, I've dealt with this color and trim, but I've never been in charge of it. It sounds like a bag of worms. He says, I think you can handle it. And I have been one to love detail. Mm-hmm. So anyway, I went up there. And in the 2 years I was there, I found out that I thoroughly liked it because more or less your own boss. And I had a design area down there that downstairs in the basement, which provided enough design interest. And the color and trim end of it became like a business, and you ran it like a director of a company. And we, as I said, the trim part of the thing, we had to work 3 years in advance. Color, more or less like 2 years because of the fact that you had to pick the colors, new colors, and then put them into the fade farms or the sun to hit them, see if they have any fade problems and so on. But I think the
fade farms.
Yes, a fade farm. It took place in Florida and California, where they took color chips.
The sun was the brightest in those two areas.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And they put them out on a rack, and then kept tabs of the fade characteristics of the colors, and we would get a record of that. And I've told you about the. Discs on the cloth and so forth, and specs there. So we have paint specs and cloth specs.
Mm. How about fabrics? Were you in charge of that too?
Well, yeah, that all goes together.
Okay.
Now, I think the thing from the exterior studio to the color and trim area, and that is that the guy that doesn't really know says, how come you haven't got all these new colors? And I found out that production lines of certain color sequences. First, you pick out the interior trim. Are you gonna have five interior trims, and what colors are they? Is it a warm blue or a cool blue? And then you'd have to figure out your color, mm-hmm. whether your exterior color was gonna be warm or cool. Mm-hmm. And these are the fascinating things because on a production line, they could maybe change one interior color per year per car line. And consequently, you had to go with many, many carryover colors mm-hmm. the next year. You could change maybe one or two colors. Mm-hmm. And also in the plants that had only one or two paint areas, you could only come up with five different colors, while in the Lincoln and Continental area, they have many paint booths, and you could come up with something like 12 or 13 or 14 different colors.
Mm-hmm.
And when I was in exterior, I never knew the reason why I was so limited in the colors of the Mustang and all the smaller cars. But it's due to the fact that they do not have that interior spread that the luxury cars have. And we also got into the fact with the how do we pick colors? Where do we go for the colors? Well, we did a lot of research in garment magazines. We did a lot of research in they had people call from the baggage, what are the new luggage colors for the next year. Then we had research of what was liked in California and New York, and we found out that this is all new to me when I went out
mm-hmm.
there.
Right.
But I found out fast
mm-hmm.
that the Westerners like the pastel colors and the Easterners like dark drab colors.
Mm-hmm.
The grays, blues are East colors, the West are whites and pastel blue and so on, because of course a reflection of the heat, and
mm-hmm.
also I think California is like that, it's upbeat.
Mm-hmm.
And those were trends. We also, when I was up there, there was somebody that wrote an article about even the sweat from your palm of your hand, if it was analyzed through microscope, and they determined that certain kinds of sweat makes you like certain colors more than others, which I never knew. But this large, you know, long article, and I saw this was a new end of the thing. I had never been in charge of that, but I thoroughly enjoyed it.
I must have been.
Along with that, we did family cars. That means Mr. Ford and Bill Ford and Benson Ford and all down a ways in relatives. And so we had a fellow in charge of that end of the thing by the name of John Reinhardt, who early in his career was chief of Packard.
And also involved with the Mark II.
And Mark II, yes, he was very much involved with that, along with Bob Thomas and a few other people.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, John helped out with the family car, keeping books and records and seeing that they got done on time and to the people.
Now, this was a situation that you might not have encountered at General Motors. You would probably, in General Motors, you'd have executive cars. And
that's right. Due to the fact that Ford is a family car company,
mm-hmm.
We did get involved with that.
So
and of course, Bill Ford had the silver and blue every year. And
was that his favorite color?
That was the color of the Lions.
Of course. How stupid of me.
Of course. Of course. God, what other colors are there?
His design cars were always silver and blue. Huh?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a one particular blue.
Mm-hmm.
And anyway, there was no mystery on that.
No.
We had some very interesting and diverse requests from the family also.
Mm-hmm.
And some of them were easy to do, and some of them were very difficult to do, and got into quite a bit of complex situations. And we can't elaborate too much on that.
Suffice it to say that there was a diverse group of expectations and desires, and a lot of fancy footwork to keep up
right.
with.
Right. And along with that, we did a specialty cars, both interior and exterior, paint. And we had a show to top management once a year. This involved maybe 12 different vehicles, going from a Lincoln down to a Mustang and a Pinto and so on, where we would try all the new fabrics out, all the new paints, and make actually a glamour show in both color and trim for the vice presidents of the company. This was a general invitation, and we, it's a showcase of our wares.
How would you showcase the interiors? Would you have a styling buck of some kind that you would?
These were actual cars.
Actual cars, okay.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So you take 12 cars or 14 cars, and you strip them and redo the paint on the outside and with clamor paints and so on, and the brand new fabrics.
I see.
You did not necessarily change the design of the instrument panel, but you did the all the seat styles and so on and the new fabrics.
You the wood graining too would come under your aegis.
That is right, and we had new wood graining, but not the general contours. Management and the vice presidents wanted to up it, and we had it every 6 months.
Oh no.
After the first couple of years, yes, it became a every 6 months show. We learned so much from it, and it proved to be interesting to everybody.
Without trying to paraphrase you, this was obviously an advanced concept workshop.
That's right.
For interior trim.
Absolutely.
And these are where you worked out the concepts that that your department had worked on and were hoping to adapt.
That's right.
Yeah. Or adopt, I should say.
That's right.
And did can you remember any specific spectacular examples of things that they were most taken with?
Well, we would do these spectacular colored cars. I remember one car that was in the show. It was plum, a plum car, and it was a mark, and it was the first time that. A red blue was ever shown. It was a little bit on the gaudy side, but we shocked them a little bit with that plum situation. And I remember that at the time, Hal Sperlich was still at Ford.
What was his position then?
Oh, he was in product planning.
Chief product, one of the senior product planners.
Yeah. Remember, he went to General Motors and with Lee, Chrysler.
Yes, right. Yes, I remember.
And went because of the small car conflict, and Mr. Ford and it's in the Lee's book anyway.
Yes.
But Hal had just gone through a divorce and wanted the plum car for the night, for the weekend.
Ah.
He had to sport on with his new girlfriend.
Mm-hmm.
And the report was that he really knocked this girl, you know. She really loved that and dug that. But anyway, that's a type of thing. We would do shocking renditions.
In effect, Mr. Sperlich was doing a market research survey that
a little
weekend.
A little bit. And we would also do every year a car like that for Gene Bourdain.
Was it, what were his
and,
favorite colors?
Well, one of them was the kind of a pink car we did.
Ah.
Pink and black. And I remember that there was quite a shocker, and
these were Lincoln's,
people really looked at it in question. It was either it was one of those things, either you liked it as a new thing, or you thought it was really gaudy.
Mm-hmm.
But somebody bought that thing. It was the same colors as some restaurant on out Telegraph Way.
Oh.
It was kind of interesting.
Mm-hmm.
But we do that for Gene every time until he got into his Clinets and
other cars. You must tell me about his Clinets. I've heard about them.
I think he has two or three of them now.
Does he?
Yeah.
What kind of car was it?
It was a Cougar. Rebuilt Cougar that...
How do you spell it? C-L-I...
Geez, I don't know. C-L-I-N... E-T.
It's a
French word.
Yeah, C-L-I-N-E-T.
Yeah,
right,
and this guy would take a Cougar chassis. It was a Ford situation.
Mm-hmm.
And rebuild the thing through this whole time.
His name, Clint A, maybe?
Yeah.
Okay. And make it into a super luxury.
Yeah, and I understand right now that he's not doing it anymore.
Oh, he isn't?
No. But I haven't kept up with that, but I think Gene at least has two of those.
Does he really?
Mm-hmm. And
but they basically were a Cougar.
But anyway, yeah.
Right.
Right. And so Gene would drive that back and forth to work. besides these special cars we make for Gene, he'd have his Colonnade parked out there. I don't know whether that went over or not, but he did it. And
was he attempting to make that into a production car eventually, or a semi-production
we
car?
We did a study on. Of course, it goes way back with a formal long hood and so forth. And
yes.
I think we did make a study of that on a Thunderbird one time.
Uh-huh.
And to see what we could get out of a custom hood out of the thing.
Yeah.
And of course, it didn't go anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
But these are the things we would try out.
Yes.
in our career.
Really a laboratory, wasn't it?
Always.
Yes.
Always. So anyway, the 2 years of color and trim, one was the gas crunch, the obsolescence of the trim program, and the designer marks where we would...
Let's develop that a bit.
Yeah.
That was very popular.
All right,
we
could not afford anything new on the car. Let's say we couldn't change the grill, couldn't change this, but we could change the color and trim and do something that would grab the public.
Mm-hmm.
What do you do for grabbers?
You're talking about Lincoln Continentals at this time, right?
Yes, Marks.
The Marks,
and,
yeah.
And Lincolns.
Mm-hmm.
And what can you do? Well, one of the things we did is that is to make a specialty thing, again, from some of our annual shows and everything else, it stimulated the thought that possibly we could have an upgrade Lincoln and an upgrade Mark and call them designer Marks and let various designers around the country and the world have their mark on the thing.
Mm-hmm.
DaVinci and Bill Blass, and a few others.
Was there a Cartier?
Yes, Cartier, right.
Yes. Now he wasn't a
no.
designer.
No. Cartier was just a name. There was a French man that had charge of the company, I think, at the time.
Uh-huh.
But Cartier's no longer run.
Right, yeah, but I mean the company
but,
itself.
But the company itself was run by a man that we dealt with.
Mm-hmm, right. And
I don't remember his name per se.
You think he just agreed to lend the name?
Yeah,
the name.
And usually the colored trim area made up samples in a very nice brochure of maybe three answers for their particular line that they would endorse, and they would pick one out of the three. We did that with Bill Blass. Bill Blass is one that, I remember he came to the design center, and actually we met him and showed him his three choices, and he was very well pleased with that.
Each of them had three separate...
Proposals.
Proposals, okay.
Right.
And did they pick one, or did they pick...
Pick one.
Pick one, okay.
Yeah, and that would become their year.
Mm-hmm.
That's their color.
Now,
and they would get their little trademark on it.
Well, that's a pretty good designer. What did he pick the first year he tried? Were you pleased with
one,
his?
1 year it was blue and white.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I was very pleased with
mm-hmm.
anything he picked.
Yeah.
The guy did a good job. And I think he had a tan 1 year, and you match it up with a special interior.
I remember the tan. It looked like sort of a tan orangish leather.
Yeah.
That you used on the exterior.
Right.
Probably a very good vinyl.
It was very nice.
Yeah. And then the interior was matched to that color, right?
Yeah.
Yes.
So anyway, every year they would change their color specs on that. But Bill Blass in particular would get his little logo, the BB on the car somewhere, and the rest of them would get their little note.
Uh-huh.
And of course you charge a guy $2,000 more, and then he gets his Bill Blass's name on the car. So that's about where it stood. We made $2,000, and I understand they went over so big,
uh-huh.
and they were making profit on that car.
You said a lot of profit. You said
Givenchy. Well, you made $2,000 right off the top.
You said Givenchy. Did you have any contact with him?
Only by mail.
Only by mail. He didn't come to Durban.
No.
But Blass did.
Blass is the one of the few.
Oh, that's good. Well, I remember those cars. They were very well accepted and very tastefully done. I was impressed when I saw those.
Right. How can you turn them off?
Okay.
I gotta. after my interior experience in color and trim, which went for 2 years almost to the day, I was transferred back to exterior, where I had Cougar, Thunderbird, all the mid-sized cars again. It's almost like a round robin. Here I am. Along with that, the Ford car exterior. This was all exterior.
You said earlier that they felt they needed you.
Yeah, that's right. That's what I found out. I didn't want to leave color and trim. However, they said, yep, I grew to enjoy it. And I told you when I went there, I had my misgivings because of all the complexity to that thing. Mm-hmm. But there were good people up there. And Andy Olenek had the color, and Jimmy Hodum had the trim, and they were had been up there for years and years and were seasoned people that you could depend on. Mm-hmm. And
Bob Hodum is still there, isn't he?
Now you say, pardon?
Bob Hodum is still there, I think. Still
Jimmy Hodum retired.
Did he?
I think he's retired now, and I think he's opening up a hardware store someplace in northern Michigan.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I've lost my train of thought there for a minute.
What you were about to say, what I was about to ask you was that who wanted you to come back and why?
Gail Halderman at that time was the executive director over this, and he and Al Mueller wanted me back in exterior.
Exterior?
Yeah.
This was the full exterior?
That's plan. What I understand, right. And so back again, I went to exterior. And we did many facelifts on the Thunderbirds, and we did the new Thunderbird and Cougar in the studio. In the, what year was that, 78, 79, Thunderbird and Cougar. The one just previous to the one currently on the market.
Mm-hmm.
And also the most interesting was that we did a new Crown Victoria. This was fashioned after the Chevrolet. And we almost the you better stop it. Let's see what one. It was formed after the Caprice Classic, and dimensioned from that car. Those two run neck and neck. The days of that, with Bill Burke was the in charge of NATO, and. We started that program and had a lot of attention from Gene Bourdonnais himself in the studio, kind of guiding that, because there was a two-door to do and a four-door to do and a station wagon.
Was and, this to fill a gap in the line at that time?
No, it was to shorten the car, to give a new dimension to the car. These are in the initial stages of the shorter car.
The downsizing.
Downsizing program.
I see.
And, trying to get the most out of the room. Now, we had a current Ford at that time in the room also, plus the Caprice, and we thought we were really doing a small car at that time, this new Ford.
Mm-hmm.
And lo and behold, right now it looks like a big car. That's how our mm-hmm. the image is going down.
Yes. Uh-huh.
And so anyway, out of that, when we first did that car and its formality and so forth, I think it was successful the first year and so forth. But lo and behold, we did not have any expectations of it lasting from 1977 when it was designed to, here it is, 85, and from the people that I've talked to, the sales reps and so forth, saying that they're working the plants three shifts and they can't keep up with the demand of that car. And originally, after it was on the road for a year or so, we thought that it would die because it was a old design. It wasn't up to the aero situation, but anyhow, it has been successful, which I'm glad about, with very little change. That car has not changed at all.
What was your input to the exterior?
Almost everything.
Everything. Mm-hmm.
And along with a crew of five people doing this and that for it.
Well, this classic design that you utilized.
Yeah.
So Gene was hovering over your shoulder.
He was there. He was there because his current interest at the time that car was done was in my studio. He was anytime he had an interest personally in a car, he was there.
Uh-huh. Personally overseen.
That's right.
Yeah.
He did not have interest in everything that was done, but when he did, he was there.
Well, it turned out to be a classic design, sort of a timeless design.
That's right.
That many generations still prefer.
Well, the trunk size is good, everything is good on the car, and it rides very, very well. It's as good as our Lincoln Town car, mm-hmm. which I think it's about the same underpinnings.
Yes.
So, along with that, we did an interesting thing. Gene wanted had the thought of possibly making a Mark station wagon off the Mercury wagon
mm-hmm.
by having a pseudo spare tire deck on a rear tailgate
uh-huh.
and putting that queue on the thing and changing the front end to a Mark front end.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, it didn't go, but that was, again, we tried these things.
That's
see how they look and see whether there's any interest.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And
how far did that get? To the
only as far as to make one up. And
a full size?
Well, yeah, it was done on the full size
clay?
Right.
Uh-huh.
Right.
Yeah, fascinating. What kind of reaction did you get to that one? That's a novel.
Well, we thought it would appeal to the snob people within Texas and other
mm-hmm.
places that
mm-hmm.
have ranches and so on that want something above the normal Ford wagon.
But a Lincoln Continental wagon.
That's right.
Fabulous.
That's right. And but it didn't. It didn't go that far. Unfortunately.
Who shot it down?
I don't know. I don't know.
Were you pleased?
But it was a good thought. Yeah.
Yeah,
it was
right.
Fine. Fantastic thought.
Yeah.
In that times, man, we started in earnest to use the wind tunnel on all our clay models. And
what was the advantage of a wind tunnel over other less formal type of design couch?
Because we were in a gas situation and we had wanted to get most miles per gallon, and that was the incentive. And if you break down the drag situation, you're going to do some, plus the fact that at that time we had a man that was in charge of our aero. I forgot the name of the thing, but anyway, had a guy watching over that type of thing and doing calculations and studies of the wind tunnel tests.
Mm-hmm.
And
big problem was the coefficient of drag.
Right. And little things, just moving a fender line down an inch or even half an inch helped, or
yes.
rounding off a corner
mm-hmm.
at those times helped out greatly. Surprising on what it does, but it was my first experience, and I went down to the University of Maryland, and where we have a 3/8 wind tunnel. That means that you have a 3/8 dimension car.
Mm-hmm.
From the full size, you dimension it down to 3/8, and then put it in the wind tunnel and run air at 110 miles an hour over it, and we see what our car is doing. And remember, we did that with the Thunderbird Cougar and also the Mercury.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So even the rounding off of the front end of the thing, the grill area,
uh-huh.
helped.
Mm-hmm.
So these things do matter. Even with that car. But I noticed that they have not changed it one bit since in 4.5 years I've been gone.
It's fascinating to me. They haven't tinkered with it except to give it a little more Well, they haven't changed much at all.
No, they haven't changed much at all.
No.
The new taillights and the new grill were in effect when I left and so on.
It works, huh?
Yeah, it was fine.
Fascinating. Well, that must make you feel good that...
Yep, I do.
The last big project you were associated with has endured so long.
That's right.
Yeah.
I'm surprised.
Well,
I'm surprised.
You shouldn't be surprised. You're surprised because you know that those products don't last that long.
That's right.
And this one has.
Right.
Does it give you quite a bit of satisfaction to see a Grand Marquis go by and say, gee, look at that?
Yeah, it was done in 1977.
77.
Yeah. But the most successful car, I guess Gene can take, I'm sure he can take credit for it, and that is the Pinto. I guess that more Pintos were made than any other thing. Yeah.
Unfortunately, it came to a sad end, but it was quite a car in its time, wasn't it?
Oh, yeah.
In terms of small cars.
Yeah.
Was that Gene's conception, pretty much?
I think so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's good.
So I ended my career in the interior, back in interiors, and had charge of almost everything at the time I left, except the color and trim area.
Mm-hmm.
So,
Now tell me, you must have, so recently, you must have been involved with the emerging pseudoscience of ergonomics. Do you remember how that came about? The pleasing the customer? Making the customer a comfortable driver.
That was just getting in effect when
was
I
it?
Was real.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. But of course we tried that all
that
the way
for
through.
Years,
yeah,
of course,
for years.
Yeah, nothing new.
We had Oscar in there. We got all
right.
the controls. We had drawings. I don't know exactly why this is being touted because we did that all the way through our career.
Tell us about Oscar. Did you have anything?
5'10". He was modeled after...
Mr. Average Consumer.
Yeah, but there was a fellow named Doff Painter.
Oh, really? A real person?
And dating back in the 50s, Doff was a young clay modeler, and he met Oscar's description and size and shape and so forth, and they modeled Doff's head, in fact.
Really?
Yeah, and he became Mr. Oscar.
The P-A-I-N-T-E-R?
Yeah,
Peter?
Right.
Mm-hmm. That's fascinating.
Yeah, and he's a 5'10" guy, mm-hmm. which was Oscar, and he set this...
Every height
and weight, right.
Mm-hmm. When did you get Oscar started?
Oh, as long as I can remember.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Back to the late 50s?
Oh, yeah.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
So what you were doing in those days is not much different from what they're touting today, is there?
I don't think so, because we had arm reach and everything mm-hmm. that they say, okay, now it's been engineered for a person and so on. And I think we did that way long time ago.
Obviously, you were angling toward the customer.
Sure. We always did that.
He wasn't comfortable. He
That's right.
Buy another car.
However, one thing I must say, that they're more conscious right now of seat comfort than they ever have been. It's a place where they can cut money and nobody knows it. And I think that we got our share of the interiors being penny pinched to save some money in comfort and seat springs. And I think that we've gone through that period where we can save money by taking out a seat spring, and now they say, hey, we got to give the guy something that he's comfortable with for a long period of time. I think we're, from my standpoint, I think they're doing things right now.
Mm-hmm.
Because even this Topaz I have, I can see where they're striving to equal or better what Japan has.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm very happy about that.
Japan has been the leader in seat comfort, haven't
right,
they, over the years?
Right. And I think Ford and the rest of them have learned their lesson. We've got to give people what they deserve when they pay out that amount of money. What used to frustrate me, because these are getting into frustrations, was that in September we would bring out a car and we'd offer this and this and this. Come January, February, we had a PIP action.
What?
A PIP action.
How do you spell that?
Profit improvement. It was incentives, you know.
Okay. Uh-huh.
Where we had to make a list of everything we could take out of the car to make a penny and so on.
This would come down to you.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, yes. Definitely. What could I do without this and that? And if it's a good...
Profit improvement factor?
Product improvement incentive.
Profit.
Profit improvement.
Improvement incentive.
Yeah.
PI.
PIP. Oh, profit improvement program.
Program, okay.
PIP.
That would come down in January.
Yep, and then we take money out. And I don't think they're doing that anymore. I know they're making a profit.
What were some examples? How would you accomplish that?
Such as MapLight or we take out things.
Yeah.
And even to the point where can that seat be built without so many springs and so on? Can we reduce the height of the carpet? So it would come out in the beginning of the year with a 16-ounce carpet and you'd end up with 14. Headlining, can you get away with a cheaper fabric? If this and that, where can you make a profit? So I'm glad, I don't think they're doing that anymore. I think that they are pricing themselves, I'm glad anyway, that they're getting closer to the Japanese and including a lot of options and so on. As standard features.
Yeah.
And I think that's great for the consumer.
Right.
Yeah. So I'm real happy about what's happening, even though I'm not in the business.
Mm-hmm. You follow pretty closely?
Yes, as much as I can.
You keep in contact with your old former comrades?
Yeah, as much as I can.
Fellow retirees.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. What, over your long career, what's been your proudest achievement, do you think? Or series of achievements?
I think with all the ups and downs of the company and so forth, I think you can be proud if you can, if you've frankly never been demoted.
Mm-hmm.
That I think I'm well thought of by my colleagues. I think that's very important. And I know some people that were demoted and it's devastating to them. And I never went through that, which I'm glad. And I, as I just got through saying, I think to be well thought of is very important. My disappointments are that I did not, because of personal reason, didn't get a chance to go overseas on some of these foreign assignments. Had a chance to go to England, Germany, Australia. I could never avail myself of that. So that's my disappointments, and my happy thoughts are that I was well thought of and did well. Okay.
The area in which you were in obviously was a very important area for you, the interiors that you spent a lot of your time with. Ford needed that. Their interiors had always been a bit stodgy, had they not, in the 40s and 50s?
In the 40s and 50s, as you recall, we had at that time a standard and deluxe trim.
Mm-hmm.
And we did not have the modern techniques to make an interior look racy and fast. As I told you, we did not have form door panels. We didn't have all the clever foam rubber tricks that we have now for seat contours and so on. Things were very, very staid and stodgy, because not because of us, but because of what we had to work with. The fabrics were very sedate. Mohair, and things like that.
Mohair.
Yeah, and so we really didn't have the tools. And as we progressed and the tools became apparent and available to us, we had more fun and more opportunities. It's not that we didn't think of those things; it's just we couldn't do them back in those days.
Right.
We dream of all these things, and how are you going to do it? We had no way of fabricating them.
In terms of fabrics and color, did you have much female input over the years? Traditionally,
I think we had girls ever since I can remember up there.
Yeah.
In various capacities. And In fact, we have one right now. I think she's taking over Odom's spot, Debbie Weber.
Mm-hmm.
And she started with me when I had the color and trim.
Mm-hmm.
And we relied on her instinct and so on, because these girls are more interested in fabrics.
Yes.
Than men.
And they have a sense of, a heightened color sense,
yeah,
as well.
Yeah, that's right. And the girls love that up there. That's a, it's a type of work they all dream about.
Mm-hmm.
So, yes, we do have girls. We had girls in design of exterior, too.
Did you?
And
color?
A girl named Mimi that was a automobile designer. And, of course, she got a lot of play because of the fact that she was a woman.
Mm-hmm. But they were good.
Yeah, she was. She happened to be good.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
That's one of the things you cannot force into the situation by numbers. We try at various times to help, I know, the more minority groups and so on, but that's one of the things that you can't just, because they are a minority, make them that good. They have to have some talent.
Yes.
You bet.
But the interiors and exterior color and trim would seem to be a natural place for a woman to be a consultant.
We have more there than any other place, right?
Yes. I guess Ford was a pioneer in that respect. They certainly